You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is episode 520 of the NYYST podcast. I am your host, Christian. And the New York Yankees are flying out of San Francisco with a sweep to start the season. That's right. Run it back 26 has gotten off pretty damn good here as the New York Yankees on Saturday night completed a sweep of the San Francisco Giants. They won the game 3-1. The bats didn't really bust out too much outside of that one inning on opening night there, but they did what they needed to do. They scored enough runs, and hey, if they would have scored one run on opening night, one run on Friday night, and then two runs on Saturday night, it would have been more than enough for the Yankees to sweep this series because they allowed all of one run to the San Francisco Giants on this opening series here. And Will Warren was the unlucky recipient of having that run scored against them. So if they still do things like kangaroo court in the clubhouse, he definitely getting a fine for that one. That this team allowed one run over the course of 27 innings, and you were the guy that allowed it. That's a fine right there. You know, you're going to be carrying bags out to the bullpen or something there. You know, Will Warren, who I'm a big fan of, he looked pretty good yesterday. Again, on a pitch count, only went about 4 1/3. So these guys are still getting built up. Bullpen has looked good so far. The offense has done enough. Again, not really busting out here, but it's early. The Yankees have gotten off to their third consecutive sweep to start a season here, which is nice to see that the Yankees are building on some wins here early. It's what we talked about a couple episodes ago about the Yankees having to get off to a hot start here. They had to stack wins early because this was not going to be easy for them schedule-wise, and that the Boone swoon always hits. You always got to build up a cushion for that. And for them to start the season off 3-0 with three very impressive wins in the pitching department leading the way here was good to see. Okay. This is going to be the overriding narrative all season long. Yeah, the Yankees look good. Yeah, the Yankees did this. But is this a championship team? And that's what it all comes down to. It's hard, you know, you obviously you want the Yankees to win. You're going to get the enjoyment out of watching 162, the entertainment, the just them being there and all that comes with that, right? You're going to get yourself lost in that. But as we sit here and we talk about this team on this show here, this is what it's evolved into because the Yankees haven't won since 2009. Because the Yankees had Juan Soto and Aaron Judge in 2024 and didn't win. Because the Yankees had what I felt and even their manager felt was one of the most complete teams that they ever had in the Aaron Boone era and didn't win. It all comes down to this. What are the Yankees going to do in October? So while, yes, it is a good start to the season, you couldn't have asked for a better start. You play three games, you win three games. You couldn't have asked for a better start from the New York Yankees this in 2026. But again, is this a championship caliber team? These are questions that I still need to be answered. What I don't need to be answered is whether or not the New York Yankees are a playoff team, because they are. Okay, three games into the season, and I said this before the season even started, I'm confident in believing that the New York Yankees are going to be in the postseason in 2026. Now, we've seen this starting pitching go out there and allow one run in this series against the San Francisco Giants. I know you can ask the question, is our pitching this good or is San Francisco this bad? And it's probably a mixture of both, because I do believe the Yankees have an excellent starting rotation. And you saw from Max Fried, Cam Schlittler was straight up dominant on Friday afternoon there. Again, he got bit by the pitch count bug. And we knew that going in that he was going to be held back a little bit because he had the back issue. So he's a little bit behind everybody else from when he made his first start in spring. So you know, we have to take that into account. But you know, then he goes out there and he strikes out eight. And then if you saw the video that the pitching ninja put up there, and you wonder why he doesn't throw much other than his fastball, he's got the cutter, the sinker, and the straight four seamer, all 96 or above, all coming out of the same plane, and then they all break at different points. And it's, so it's almost like three different pitches. Would I love to see Cam Schwiller work on a changeup or a splitter? Yes. Do I think he's going to at some point? Hopefully. He's going to need that to diversify his arsenal. But looking at these fastballs that he's throwing, they're all three at break at different points. So it is like three different pitches to the hitter. The kid's tough, man. And he's something that we can definitely look forward to as the season progresses. And the Yankees are going to hit October with three aces. I don't think that's crazy to say. They were talking about this on the broadcast last night. Was John Smoltz, who he wasn't the worst I've ever heard him last night. I think it took him until about the seventh inning to bring up the short porch when Ryan McMahon was up. So that's probably a record for him in a Yankee game to wait till the seventh inning to bring up the porch. But they were talking about this, and they said, Carlos Rodon, as good as Carlos Rodon is, and you guys know I have my issues with Carlos Rodon, but as good as Carlos Rodon is, he's like their fourth best starter. That's how good this rotation is. And I believe that. I believe he is probably right now their fourth best starter. You know, even that, and that's even with saying that Gerrit Cole is not here yet and Rodon will be back sooner. But once we hit October, looking at a rotation where Carlos Rodon is in the four spot, you can't even find, you won't even probably be able to find a start for Luis Gil or Will Warren in the postseason. Now, obviously, this is all dependent on health. We all know this. Knock on wood here. But this is a real strength for the New York Yankees that they have not had in a long time, where you can sit there and say that this team is six legitimate major league pitchers deep right now. Well, not right now, but come June. There are six legitimate major league pitchers deep in Max Fried, Cam Schwiller, Will Warren, Luis Gil, Carlos Rodon, and Gerrit Cole. And we're not even talking about Ryan Weathers, who's going to make his debut on Monday. And I leave him just to the side of being, quote, legitimate, because he hasn't had a full season doing it. But the Yankees have a lot of high hopes for him. And you have LeGrande, and you have Rodriguez in the minor leagues. This is a very, very deep staff. All guys that can profile at the worst a three. At the worst a three on their high-end days. Will Warren is probably a four or five, but when he's on, you can't make, I mean, you can't say that he's not, he doesn't have the potential to be like a low-end three. That's how good the staff is. And yes, obviously it's going to be dependent on health. We all know this. But I think as long as everybody's healthy, you're looking at guys like, we talked about this, guys like Luis Gil are going to have problems staying in the rotation. Because we talked about this, right? That even if you look at whenever the calendar is, it's about April 11th when they're going to need a fifth star. You look at that and then you map it out to when Rodon's going to be back. And even if the Yankees say, all right, we're just going to call him up right now, we'll figure out what we need to figure out later on. Okay? You do that. Gil's your fifth starter. Carlos Rodon comes back. Somebody's got to get bumped. Who's it going to be? So it's already one down, which is why I said that the Yankees might choose to have Ryan Yarbrough, who we haven't seen yet, pitch. I did doze off a little bit on opening night. I'm not going to lie about that. It just took so long to get to that game. That I did close my eyes for about an inning there, but I don't think he pitched if I read the box score correctly. But would the Yankees say to themselves that, hey, it's two or three starts? We'd rather have Ryan Yarbrough make him so we don't have to make a roster move. And he didn't pitch on opening night. I know he didn't pitch on yesterday, and he didn't in the day before that, so he hasn't thrown yet. Okay, are the Yankees saying that if it's two or three starts, let's rather have Ryan Yarbrough make them, knowing that he can do a representative job there, and we don't have to make a roster move? Because you're gonna have to make a roster move for somebody come Carlos Rodon coming back. And if you don't call up Ryan, if you don't call up Luis Hill, you don't have to make that roster move. I mean, you could look at the guy, like, you know, look at somebody in the bullpen that maybe you maybe a Cade Winquest would be a guy candidate to go bye-bye. It's possible. But then you got to pull somebody out of the rotation. And the Yankees already put Ryan Weathers in the rotation. They're not going to want to take him out 3 weeks later. Because they could have just left Luis Hill here. Because they said, okay, Luis Hill's our fourth starter, and we'll go to the fifth when we need a fifth, whether that be Ryan Weathers, Ryan Yarbrough, or wait for Carlos Rodon, whatever it would have, you know, whatever it would have been there. That's what they could have done. But they chose Ryan Weathers over Luis Hill because they want Ryan Weathers making starts, and they're not going to want to pull him out of the rotation in 3 weeks. And Will Warren has done nothing to, I mean, and what are you going to see in the next two starts from Will Warren that you're going to say to yourself, oh, he's got to come out? They talked about it last night. I remember vividly the definitely the Toronto and the Dodgers. There was a couple others where he's given up five starts or more in a game. But overall, Will Warren was really good for the Yankees last year. He rang the bell 33 times. You can't, you know, from a back end of the rotation guy, you can't really ask for much more than that. Kept the Yankees in the majority of the games that he pitched, more than the majority of the games that he pitched. He had five really bad ones, and then he was really pretty good the rest of the way there. So you can't really ask for more than that. So that's why, you know, I say things and people don't want to do the critical thinking on it. But let's do the critical thinking on it. If it's only two or three starts for the fifth starter, what are the Yankees going to do there? It's not just, to me, it's just not a slam dunk Luis Hill goes into rotation, because somebody's got to come out in that time frame, after that time frame for Carlos Rodon. And then who's it going to be? And then I'm automatically eliminating Ryan Weathers because I don't think the Yankees want to pitch him out of the bullpen, because they could have just did this already. They didn't want to do that. And then it's Hill and Warren. Then which one of them translates to the bullpen better? I don't know if either one of them translates well. They both have options. You're going to send one of them to the minor leagues? I mean, crazier things have happened. Well, Hill's already been in the minor leagues, so then now you're going to send Warren to the minor leagues? And then what happens when Gerrit Cole comes back? You got to pull. I mean, that's obviously a longer-term situation, but somebody else is going to have to come out of the rotation. So you're looking at guys like Luis Hill and Will Warren that probably – or Ryan Weathers. Again, Weathers is probably going to be performance-based, but the Yankees are going to give him the opportunity because this is the one differentiating thing that they did in the offseason here. That you're going to look at one of those, two of those three guys come June are not going to be in the rotation. And do you make trade? Do you trade them, or do you just roll with your depth? Because remember, you also have LeGrande and you have Rodriguez in the minor leagues. As I talked about last episode, I do think LeGrande will be here, but I think the Yankees are going to let him start, barring major catastrophes, and it would take multiple of them to get him up here because of the Yankees' depth. They're going to let him start. And then when he gets down to the wire there, whatever the amount of innings is, they're going to say, okay, well, let's put him in the bullpen. Unless the Yankees go out there and acquire like another closer type to go with Duvall and Hill and Cruz and David Bednar. Unless they do that, then maybe they would just give LeGrande the full year of development as a starter and shut him down when it's time to shut him down. But I just think overall that 103 is going to be too tempting for the Yankees to let sit in Scranton for the entire season. So it's interesting. It's interesting to look at here of what the Yankees' starting rotation is going to look like. And this is going to be a big strength for them, you know. It's going to come down to what this offense does in October. That's what it's going to come down to. What this offense does as a whole, not just one guy, but the offense as a whole does in October. Because the starting pitching is going to be there. I think the bullpen will be there. What is the offense going to do in October? So, yeah, we can get excited and have fun with these 3 days. But, again, because of what has happened since 2009, and especially these last two seasons, it's gotten me to the point where, like, all I can say is, but what about October? Because it only matters about October at this point. Yes, the Yankees have to get there, but I believe they will get there. I don't think that there's going to be any, barring, again, major catastrophes, I don't think anything's going to stop them from getting to October. There's three wild cards. You're running back a team that won 94 games. I don't like run it back 26 because 25 didn't win a championship. So that's why I want it different in 26. But is run it back 26 a bad baseball team? No, not in the slightest. You have one of the deepest and most talented rotations in all of Major League Baseball. You have a really good back end of the bullpen. And you have an offense, while not different, you have an offense that scored the most runs in Major League Baseball last year. So do the math on that, on how that is a team that doesn't go to the postseason. I didn't say wins a division. I didn't say wins a championship. I said goes to the postseason. So do the math on that. The math says this team is going to the postseason. That's what the math says. And we saw the formula, and this team might play a little bit differently throughout the course of the year. It might give you a little bit of hope. But again, you know, I always go back to this. You can witness things from April or end of March to the end of September and make you think differently. But why do the Yankees always get this vertigo in October? And Cody Bellinger, one of the things I loved about Cody Bellinger in 2025, watching him every day, was that he had an idea of what he wanted to do at the plate. He was just trying to put the ball in play somewhere. He would signal his one pitch, lock in, and try to pull it for a home run. He had that one pitch in the at-bat, and then he didn't try again. He didn't really overswing or try to pull the ball in any other pitch in the at-bat. He was just trying to get on, find a hole somewhere, dunk one in, get a seeing eye single. And that's what I loved about him. It seemed like we had a guy here that had an approach. And then in October, there was just like, approach be damned. We're swinging from the heels every at-bat. So that's why, again, you got to be a little bit cautious about what you watch in the regular season with the Yankees. This team is built to win regular season games. This team is built to win a lot of regular season games. But what we care about here is winning a championship. The Yankees have yet to do that since 2009. And I don't want to be the jaded fan that comes on here and says, yeah, that was fun, but what does it mean for October? And I know we're three games into a 162-game season. But everything has to lead to October for the Yankees. This has to be the year this team clears that hurdle. Aaron Judge is turning 34 years old soon. A man's physical prime ends around the age of 35. I mean, when Aaron Judge is no longer Aaron Judge, this team is going to be in a little bit of trouble. Capitalize on it. This has to be the year they capitalize on it. It really should have been 2024 was the year they capitalized on it. But if you look at a team that had Juan Soto and Aaron Judge and still feel like this team was incomplete, there's only one person to blame for that. And it's not Hal Steinbrenner. Maybe it is. I go, oh, no, we talk about that a lot too because he refuses to change anything. Well, you know, all offseason, everybody was flipping out and just going bananas. He's going to lower the payroll to 280. He's going to slash the payroll. It's the most money the New York Yankees have ever spent on a baseball team. Does he like spending this much money? Probably not. Is he going to be one of the owners pushing for a cap? Wouldn't surprise me at all. Did he actually say that he wanted to see the payroll get lowered? Yes. Did he say it was likely? He said it was not likely. And then he spent more money on this team than he has or anybody else has ever owned the Yankees on payroll this year. So I never really believed that the Yankees were going to cut payroll, and they haven't. I mean, if you factor in all these things that they factor, if you look at that chart that's going around, the second highest paid player in terms of everything in Major League Baseball is Cody Bellinger. And you guys and people really thought the Yankees were going to be out here slashing payroll this year. And again, you talk about that and you're like, is this team any closer to winning a title than they were last year? And on March 29th, as I sit here, I say, no, they're not really any closer. There are some really good things to like about this team, and we saw them on display in this series against San Francisco. The New York Yankees are a team that has the best hitter on the planet in the middle of that lineup, and he covers for a lot of deficiencies. And yes, Aaron Judge is the best hitter on the planet. Aaron Judge has struggled through the first three games here. He struck out way too much for anybody's liking, and nobody's saying that he hasn't. But after everybody freaked out on Wednesday night and wanted to make their grand proclamations about Aaron Judge, he followed it up with home runs on Friday and a home run on Saturday, and the Yankees won. So the Yankees used their power on Friday with home runs from Judge and Stanton, and they used their power on Saturday, which would have been a long gone home run at Yankee Stadium with that, but that's still a big booming double from Rice, and a home run from Aaron Judge. On Wednesday, they singled Logan Webb to death. One extra base hit in the seven runs that they scored against them. So they won these three games offensively in a variety of different ways. Two of them, they relied on Aaron Judge's power. One of them, Aaron Judge didn't do anything, and they just found spots. And you're going to win that. That's how you got to win in October, finding spots. Put the ball in play. I talked about this on the episode I did after opening day. Ryan McMahon's hit was such a key to that game, and all he did was put the bat on the ball, and the ball found a way into the outfield. You know what happens? You know how you don't score two runs in that situation? You strike out. Put the bat on the ball. Make things happen. And then you'll have your games where, no, they didn't hit a ton of home runs, but they relied on the home run to win. That's how that was their offense. And the pitching was great. The Yankees pitching, as I said, is going to be the star of this team. That is, you know, outside of Aaron Judge, their biggest weapon is their starting rotation. And we saw that so far in the first three games of this series. That the Yankees starting rotation, I mean, Cam Schlittler, 5 1/3, 8 Ks. I mean, he only threw 68 pitches, but again, we knew, like, you probably wanted him closer to 80, 85 in his first start. We knew he was going to be back a little bit. You just wanted him to stay out there selfishly because he allowed one hit over 5 1/3, and he was just gassing everybody. You wanted to see how crazy it could have gotten. Could Cam Schlittler had a 10, 11, 12 strikeout first performance of the season? Hey, if he could have went to 85, 90 pitches, maybe you could have got another two or three out of him. And Will Warren was pretty good yesterday, man. I got to say, I don't have a problem with the way Will Warren pitched on Saturday night. Will Warren, I mean, he came out a little bit early because he did throw a lot of strikes, but Will Warren gave the Yankees 4 1/3. He threw a lot of pitches. He threw 83 pitches, and that was 4 1/3. So that was right around his limit, the 80, 85 mark. But, you know, 100 gets you through five, probably. And, you know, as he works out somebody, because he walked two, gave up five hits. I mean, when you walk two, give up five hits and allow one earned run, and that is clearly the worst start by a starter in a series, shows you how good the starting pitching was. And he was fine. He was fine. I mean, Jake Bird looked like a real weapon out of the pen on Saturday night, and that was a guy that got banished to Scranton after the trade last year. So if he's anywhere near the guy that the Yankees thought he was going to be when they traded for him, that's another weapon out of the bullpen. And rubber arm Tim Hill pitched again, an inning and a third on Saturday, doing Tim Hill things. I mean, what more can really be said about Timmy Hill? This guy does not look like a professional athlete. He looks like a geometry teacher whose wife's having an affair on him, and he's driving a rusted out old brown pickup truck, and he may or may not be snorting meth to get through the pain of his everyday life. But you know what he does do? Gets outs. He gets a lot of them. This is what is crazy about baseball, is that Tim Hill was DFA'd by one of the worst teams in the history of Major League Baseball, and he's become a huge weapon for a team that's in the postseason every year. That's why, you know, I look at the bullpen as a weak point, and they did have one of the worst bullpens in recent memory last year. But they also usually figure out a way to get it done and get the outs out of the bullpen. And that's a credit to the scouting department and Matt Blake and what they see in some guys that other teams don't see. You know, did it end well for Luke Weaver here last year? No, but, I mean, he was a guy that was a nobody. Literally, he was a nobody. Floundering around. The Yankees took a flyer on him in a year they weren't going to the postseason. And he was the closer of a team that won the pennant. And, you know, there's plenty of guys that you can look at that's come through here over the years that the Yankees have gotten good seasons out of. And you only need to have your closer, you have your setup guy, you know, you have Timmy Hill. You only need, like, maybe two guys to pop, and you have a bullpen along with Fernando Cruz. You have a bullpen. And you do look at a guy like Ian Hamilton and Jake Cousins. I mean, yeah, DFA'd now, but they were options. They got big outs. They usually do find a way to figure this out. The one thing the Yankees have right now that should make you feel confident when the Yankees have a lead in the ninth inning, is they have David Bednar. Is David Bednar going to give you agita and make you sweat out every single appearance that he has? Absolutely. I think he gets off on it. It seems that David Bednar does not have his mind in the game until the game is hanging by a thread. And we saw it again on Saturday. You're sitting there thinking that the Giants are going to tie this game or possibly walk off. Nope, Bednar's like, strikeout, double play, let's go home. We saw it in the WBC. Even on Friday night, he allowed a runner on because it's just not exciting enough for David Bednar. The thing about David Bednar, though, is he gets the outs he needs to get. I love David Bednar. David Bednar is a guy where the moment is not going to be too big for him, and he's got stones to close, okay? That is two of the biggest things that you can have as a closer, is the moment's not too big for you and you got the stones to close games. And he's got both. And he's not just a thrower, he's a pitcher. He's got a 96-mile-an-hour fastball, which for a closer is not really that impressive, but he's got the splitter. And he knows he's got an idea out there of what he wants to do instead of just trying to pump gas past somebody. He's an adventure, but he's also probably the best closer the Yankees have had in a decade. We talked about Aroldis Chapman. You know, Aroldis Chapman was really, really good for the Yankees. Problem with Aroldis Chapman is he wasn't really, really good for the Yankees when it mattered most. I don't see that being a problem for David Bednar. So we got a closer that we can rely on. We got a closer that's going to make us pull our hair out. All my hair is on my chin. But I'll be tugging this friggin' thing every time he's on the mound. But it's just, but honestly, like, I'm watching that game last night, and the Giants are ready to, at the very least, tie the game. 2-1, nobody out. And Harrison Bader is a guy that lives for clutch moments, too. And last year, I'm thinking we're losing that game. Year prior, thinking we're losing that game. Year prior to that, thinking we're losing that game. Last night, thinking David Bednar is going to get out of it. And he did. Strikes out Bader, and then he gets a double play. And then you see him over there saying, let's fucking go. Let's not go to the hospital from all the heart attacks you're going to give Yankee fans. But, hey, listen, again, three games. We saw it, but we saw it in the WBC. We saw it last year. He's gonna ramp up the excitement. He's gonna ramp up the drama a little bit. It's what he does. But he's gonna get out of it more times than not. Is he gonna get beat sometimes? Yeah, that's baseball. Everybody gets beat. Even Mariano Rivera got beat. It happens. Do I have confidence of him on the mound? Yes. It's like David Robertson used to walk the bases loaded with nobody out, and they'd get out of it unscathed. Hey, same name, right? David Bednar, David Robertson. Something about David's closing for the Yankees. They make you have a panic attack, but they'll win the game. I think this is a guy that the Yankees can absolutely rely on in the ninth inning, and I think he's going to be a huge weapon for them come October if the Yankees have games that they got to close out. And I did watch Devin Williams' Met debut on Saturday because they played at 4 o'clock leading into the Yankee game. Oh, I thought he was going to spit it up. Thought he was going to do it. Hey, you know what? He didn't. They won on a Luis Robert walk-off, so good for them. I'm not rooting against the Mets. I don't root against the Mets. I'm not rooting against Devin Williams. All I'm saying is I watched this guy pitch here last year, and he was afraid of his own shadow. I watched David Bednar pitch now for the back end of 2025 in the WBC, and then two games here so far in 2026. He's not afraid of the moment. He's definitely not. If he gets beat, it's not because he's scared. And then sometimes that's all you can ask out of your closer. Don't be scared. What did Kevin McAllister say when Harry Marsh showed up? Don't get scared now. And if you don't do that in the ninth inning with the type of stones that David Bednar has, the Yankees are going to be shaking hands more often than not. So it was a good first series for the Yankees. You saw a lot of things that you liked. One of the things that you liked, and if you haven't seen the video of Eugenio Suarez challenging two strike three calls in a row against him, against C.B. Buchner, watch it. Find it. SGR sent me the clip on YouTube. Watch it. If you were somebody that came into the season not liking the ABS system, and then watch this video from Saturday of Suarez challenging two straight strike three calls against him from Buchner, and then tell me you still don't like it. Because with Angel Hernandez gone, C.B. Buchner is now the official worst umpire in Major League Baseball. And you would have thought the Reds hit a walk-off home run to win the World Series the way that the fans were cheering. Incredible. Watch it. But what we've seen so far also here is that Austin Wells is a better home plate umpire than the home plate umpires are. I believe he's 6-for-6 so far in challenges. Hey, it's good when your catcher knows the strike zone. And we've seen Judge use that to his advantage. Low strike call, got to call the ball, hits a home run in that at bat. Things got a little bit hairy for Bednar in the ninth. Strike three call, challenge, call the ball, walks him. Things might not have been so hairy had that stood. So you're seeing the impact of the ABS on these games so far. And when umpires don't think that one pitch can change the outcome of an at-bat through three games of the major league season with this challenge system in place, we now have the physical proof that one pitch does in fact change the outcome of an at-bat. The automatic strike on 3-0, you don't think that changes an at-bat when the guy should be at first base and now the pitcher's allowed back into the count? That's the most obvious one. Bye-bye to that. The same thing where, you know, it's a 1-0 count, gets banged to strike when the ball's, off the plate. You don't think there's a huge difference between 2-0 and 1-1 about how the pitcher's going to attack, about the type of swing that the batter's going to take, or even if the batter's going to offer at a 2-0 pitch? Maybe he wants to see him throw a strike at that point. They're just trying. They're down by two, and they want to get base runners on. 1-1, you can't be selective. 2-0, you can be a little bit selective. 2-0, you might be more prone to throw a fastball to get back in the count. 1-1, you're trying to make your pitch. Funny, a regular person like me can figure that out, but umpires that get paid to officiate these games, they say they haven't figured it out. And still with this challenge system in play where they are now being held accountable on the spot, there's still mistakes being made. It is three games in. I would love to see what the numbers look like, say, around the All-Star break, if we're getting more accurate calls because the umpires don't want to get shown up with this. So we'll see. But through the first three games of the season here, you got to love it. You have to absolutely love it, and you're seeing the impact of what it's having on these games. You have the technology to do it. Let's get the calls right, and let's have the game's outcomes be the way they're supposed to. So Yankees are heading to Seattle now after an off day on Sunday, this weird Sunday off day. I know a lot of people got upset with it, but the Yankees started on Wednesday. There's always usually an off day after opening day. You do that to protect against the weather, and it's the one thing that Major League Baseball does to protect the fans. You know, they're always trying to get every last buck out of the fans, but it's the one thing that they do that actually protects the fans a little bit. You pay for opening day prices. You pay for opening day tickets. They leave that day open in case of weather. This way, you still have opening day. So, would I love to be watching the Yankees on a Sunday afternoon after not having baseball for the entire winter? Yeah, I would be, but I understand it, and we're going to have every friggin' Sunday from now until October, so I'm not going to be too upset over the first one. But it is a little funky start to the season here for the Yankees because they Wednesday night on Netflix, day off, Friday afternoon on YES, and then Saturday night on Fox, so three games on three different channels. But now we're going to get a nice little YES run here as they're in Seattle here. 9:40 start on Monday as the Yankees head to Seattle to take on the Mariners, the team that took Toronto to game 7 in the ALCS. Ryan Weathers was going to make his Yankee debut against Luis Castillo. And then on Tuesday, 9:40, Max Fried for his second start of the season against Logan Gilbert. And then on Wednesday, 4:10, should be a good pitching matchup here. So remember, 4:10 on Wednesday, Cam Schlittler against George Kirby. And then the Yankees are going to be off on Thursday before they head home for their opener on Friday, their home opener on Friday, Miami, 1:35. So, yes, that's the look ahead here for the Yankees as they finish this first West Coast trip off of the year. And I do like the Yankees are getting a West Coast trip out of the way early, that they're playing the Giants and the Dodgers out there this year, so there's going to be more West Coast games than they played last year. And I do like that they're getting one out of the way early because the Yankees do have to go a little bit out. And I hate that they're doing this. You should formulate this where East Coast teams don't have to play out West. There's got to be a way that they can formulate this in September because The Yankees start September with a West Coast trip against the Angels and Padres, and then they're home for the Rockies and Mets, and then they have their last road trip of the year in Minnesota and Arizona. So it's not advantageous to have the Yankees doing that travel in the last month of the season, but that's what it is. But we got a long way to go there, and we'll start with game four on Monday. And hopefully you guys have subscribed to the very podcast feed that you're listening to us on right now. We have officially entered the final season of the NYYST podcast. So make sure you are subscribed so you don't miss any new episodes of NYYST. And make sure you are subscribed to NYY Underground on YouTube so you don't miss any new episodes of The Bronx or Nowhere. Next episode is April 2nd, live at 8 o'clock on The U. And please leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you guys so much, man. Love you guys. And thank you again for listening to episode 520. I'll see you next time.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.